Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Those are Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, recording less than 24 hours from the release of this episode.
Really? Way less.
Less than 12 hours from the release of this episode. A rare, hyper-fast turnaround for The Greatest Discovery.
This is one of those writing the papers the morning of the test type of records that I don't think we've ever done before.
I mean, the reason The Greatest Discovery comes out on Tuesday is because we didn't want to die trying to turn around episodes on Friday or whatever for a show that typically airs on Thursday.
And now look at us dying anyway.
It seems like Star Trek has just decided that Thursdays are the days that they release episodes, and they've also decided that Prodigy is not one of the shows that they're going to give us screeners for.
I also need to take the blame for this. I was confused about our production and release schedule. I didn't think we were doing an episode this week.
You got to check the spreadsheet, Adam.
Yeah, I realized much later that we were.
Well, you had a weekend trip, which made it a thing. But hey, one thing we did get from the Star Trek Industrial Complex for Star Trek : Prodigy, Adam, is a great big box.
Yeah, it's been in my studio office for about a week and a half now. So I think before anything has a chance to spoil, Ben, we should see what's in the box.
Yeah, I hope there's not like fresh fruit in there or anything.
There frequently is.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
This is a much heavier box than previous boxes they've sent.
The first thing I'm noticing is the clothing. I've got a sweatshirt in here.
Oh yeah, did you get two sweatshirts?
Wow, this is very generous.
I like these sweatshirts. These are nice.
They look to be the same ones. They both have the updated com badge logo for the show today. And then on the sleeve, Ben, I knew you'd like this. On right sleeve, they've got the thing that all premium garments have, a little sleeve logo there that says Star Trek Prodigy.
We totally bit this rhyme. We started putting the Uxbridge Shimoda logo on the sleeves of the t-shirts that we sell at podshop.biz.
You're wrong about that, Ben. They bit our rhyme.
Under that, there's a tote bag.
Another rhyme that they may or may not be biting from us. This is great. Check out the gusset.
The gusset. Is it? What are we talking about?
Definitely
a three-inch gusset?
Gusset. Yeah. We are expert in gussets these days.
We've been looking at a lot of different options for tote bags on the internet for reasons, Adam.
This is really cool. It's got kind of blueprint schematics.
Oh yeah.
Of the ship on it.
Of the starship Protostar. It's kind of a mouthful to have star in there twice, right?
It is. It is a lot. I'm looking at a coloring book now. It looks like it's bagged and bordered the way a comic book would be.
Correspondent.
Oh, damn.
I'm going to have to send the contents of this back up to Seattle to some friends' kids.
Friends with kids, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're really going to love this stuff.
There are some non-perishable snacks in here. This first one is called Moon Cheese.
If I haven't taken a good enough shower, and then I do, you know, that classic bit where you moon someone.
Oh, yeah. They might catch an eyeful of some moon cheese.
Yeah. And then we got some arts and crafts here, too, Ben. We got a planet maker.
Yeah.
With a bunch of powders. If you didn't tell the person receiving this what these were, looks like drugs to me.
Oh, there are colored pencils in here.
This is really cool stuff.
Great. There's a bag of granola.
Have you opened this little box?
I have not.
People watching at home will see that this looks like a Captain Janeway mug.
And there's coffee in there.
Wait
a second. This isn't coffee.
It's hot chocolate and a branded marshmallow. Branded marshmallow.
They printed the logo of the Starfleet logo badge on the marshmallow itself. It's a really big marshmallow.
How many inches is the gusset on the marshmallow?
I don't want to get into a marshmallow measuring contest with you, Adam.
This is great.
Man.
We haven't looked into merchandising marshmallows yet, but now...
I think...
That is one rhyme that I want a bite of theirs.
That has been an oversight on our part, and we're going to correct that.
Do you think it would have been inappropriate for the kids had the marshmallow been Murph, and you just you just melt Murph into the hot cocoa?
Yeah. I don't want a bouncing planet maker kit. I want a bouncing Murph kit.
Yeah. Or a stress ball that's Murph. I bet they went through a lot of ideas for Murph. Yeah. Murph merch, I want to call it.
Murph.
That just would not be appropriate.
Yeah.
You don't want to treat Murph that way.
Murph's a good guy. Don't abuse Murph.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we have opened the box. We now know what's in the box.
The beating has stopped from within my studio office. The telltale beating of Murph the marshmallow.
Do you want to get into the episode, the first ever episode of Star Trek : Prodigy? You know, for kids.
Hey, guess what isn't for kids? Our show.
Yeah.
Before we start the show, let's disabuse the viewers of a couple of things.
Hey, listen, if you're listening with your fucking children,
get those fuckers out of earshot or wear your headphones. That's rule number one. Also, this is an off-season dalliance right now before Discovery comes back. I imagine with enough time, with another off-season, we can come circle back around to this, but we're a two shows a week bit of production here, and we still don't have a producer.
Hopefully we will have a producer before Discovery kicks off, but I was thinking maybe like we could use the Marins to lightly recap short episodes of Prodigy during the run of Discovery, but I think we may have to push pause on Prodigy and then come back to it later or something. Or maybe we'll think Prodigy's way better than Discovery and just like, we don't need to.
Yeah, maybe Discovery can fucking wait in line because Prodigy just cut to the front.
Welcome to The Greatest Prodigy. It's a new Star Trek podcast on the same feed as The Greatest Discovery. I'm Ben Harrison.
For how many years did your parents call you The Greatest Prodigy before they realized? Before they became very disappointed.
Here's the thing, Adam. I was always told by my parents that I was a smart boy, but nobody ever had any illusions that I was the smartest boy because I went to a school that surrounded me with kids that were obviously smarter than me.
God, that really sucks, right? Like, that's got to be more harmful than anything else, is the thinking that you might be and then surrounding you with those that are.
I think it's good to have your illusions shattered early.
I had to wait many more years before I realized how much more less than I was than the people around me. You got yours done early, Ben. Well, let's get this episode done as early as possible because... we got to basically put this out as soon as we finish recording.
We got to turn it and burn it.
It's Star Trek Prodigy, Season 1, Episode 1. It's called Lost and Found.
Star Trek fanfare to open the episode. I really like the the color and style of the star fields that we see in this show so far.
This is a big TV show in a way that, as a kid, I never got big TV shows. You and I grew up watching little TVs and little TV shows on them. And now I can't imagine being a little, being sat in front of a 65-inch TV, if you're lucky enough, and watching a show like this.
You hear over and over again about how children's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, and how, like, everything is going to be YouTube and TikTok. And
well, there is why.
Well, like, this blew me away because it's like, it is not quite up to the animation standard of what you would expect to see in a feature film for kids, but it is pretty close. And
yeah,
this is a long episode. It's a full hour of television.
I don't go to many feature films for kids, Ben. How is this not that?
Skipping way ahead, like, there's the shot where the ship, like, plows through a waterfall, and we didn't get a shot of our main character, Dal, like, actually getting sloshed. And I was, you know, it struck me that, like, on the kind of budget that you would have for a feature film, that shot would definitely be in there.
The thing you like about children's cinema is the insert.
Jesus.
That's what you're saying? You're missing a lot of inserts?
But like those moments are few and far between. The moments where you're like, this is not as perfect as it would be if they'd spent 6 years making it for, you know, a cinema audience. But it's very close. Like and it's beautiful and a very distinctive art style. We start like pulling out through, it's not dilithium, it's something else that they're mining, but it is crystals in a mine. And this is a very Rurapente style operation. It's the Tars Lamora prison colony. And it is a grim and terrible place where prisoners are engaged in forced labor extracting this crystalline mineral.
We don't see topside yet, but we can only assume there are no stockades.
Yeah.
No vast digital frontier.
Yeah.
Punishment means exile from prison to the surface.
Our main character, Dal, is contemplating going to the surface because he sees a cart of this stuff getting pulled up on a chain through a aperture up at the top of the vast cavernous space that they're in. And he also notices a strange robotic creature watching him in the distance.
We often ask ourselves this very question, Ben. Who is this for when we talk about our own shows?
And the answer is us, you and me.
I think as we watch Star Trek Prodigy, this might be a question that we return to several times. But when you see Dal, and you see the way that he's cool, that question became something I asked myself right away. And with the rat tail especially, for kids of a certain age, for adults of a certain age, like you and me, the rat tail meant cool.
Yeah.
At least when I was growing up.
I had a rat tail for a time as a child.
I was never cool enough to pull one off. I had the shaved sides. That's how that was my cool hair choice.
I begged for the shaved sides, and my parents said that was for bad kids.
Your parents made a good decision.
But I got the rat tail? Give me a break.
Yeah, I was bad kid burlesque with those shaved sides.
They should have guarded me from the whole situation and just, like, let me have a dorky haircut.
It's a character visualization choice that makes me wonder if, like, if that translates to a kid of today. Do you see rat tail and do you think cool the way we do?
Also, do you think that this is tail or is it hair? Because
it seems to have a movement to it that suggests not hair.
He and Dal is like an unknown species. He doesn't know anybody that speaks his language. The only two people he can speak to here, we'll meet one of them in a second, but this first one is Dreadnok, this like Darth Vader looking robot that is looking for Fugitive Zero, and Dreadnok shows Dal a hologram of Fugitive Zero. And hey, we've seen that hologram before just a second ago.
Fugitive Zero makes me think of like the comic book issue Zero, the pre-release.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are they calling this thing Fugitive Zero. It makes no sense to me. Have they never had a fugitive and they're thinking this may beget future fugitives?
Yeah.
And so they're starting with Zero? I don't get the numbering convention here.
I think we just learned that the name of the character is Zero eventually, so it's...
I never put that together.
Maybe that's a name that was thrust upon that character and it will go through a change, but for now, that's my theory of the character.
We learn in this scene that our main character, their full name is Dal R.L., and that seems like they're talking straight to us, Ben, mm-hmm. with R as the middle name there.
It does. It's like... Every new Star Trek series has a little nod to this show, I think.
It's true. Yeah, and the biggest nod, maybe, is how much back talk there is by Dal.
Yeah.
At this prison warden figure.
One of your classic back-talking teens.
Have you seen Fugitive Zero?
I can see how you lost him. He barely fits in your hand.
Back-talking so bad that he's about to get killed by Dreadnought when... Fugitive Zero, like, pulls one of its robotic wooden shoes off and shoves it into the machine.
Hence the word sabotage.
Not long into the show before we get our first prison break. That's what this feels like right away. And during this escape, we see how tiny Dal is compared to all the other prisoners.
Yeah, there are a lot of very brutish shapes in this prison. One of whom Dal, like, smashes into the backside of, and it's a big, like, rock person. That is very intimidating. Growls at Dal.
Good thing Dal didn't run into that rock person's knee.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he's about knee height.
It seems like maybe that character keeps its testicles under that plate that falls off of its chest, though. That seemed like very suggestive, the way that plate fell off. I wondered if that was going to turn into anything, but it doesn't.
Right. No, it's a kid's show.
Nobody's taking it in the nuts on a kid's show.
Dal hitches a ride on one of these ore baskets and thinks he's made it away in some real, like, lower decks shit talking. Like, might as well be giving double middles when one of these watchers shoots at the chain. And the watchers look like exocomps with legs to me.
Yeah, they do.
They've got legs and tails.
Spidery exocomps. And so he plummets to the bottom of this mine and...
He's fine, though.
He's fine.
He falls from, like, 500 feet. He reaches terminal velocity.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that, you know, your classic Hero of a Thousand Faces myth often includes a character, you know, your main character has an unknown origin. This is what happens with Luke Skywalker at the beginning of Star Wars. This is what happens with so many of these stories, but also... unknown special abilities, and I'm sure that because Dal is of species unknown, we will find that Dal has some interesting capabilities, and maybe falling from very high heights is one of his.
He can fall, but he can most certainly be crushed, as we'll find out later.
Yeah. So he steals a whip from a Tellarite guy.
I'm only bordering your Humvee.
I'll be sure to return it.
If this is the D-Quad, which is sort of the implication here,
mm-hmm.
this Tellarite's pretty far afield.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
What kind of trouble did this Tellarite get into get sent to this prison?
Dal flies this stolen craft through the rubble crusher outlet, which is like the one way you don't want to leave. Not exactly a beaded curtain.
Yeah. It has real Galaxy Quest smashy compactor room vibes.
Yeah.
And this is probably, like, the most kids' cartoony sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Just the kind of, like, absolutely absurd escape scene that goes nowhere. He does not make his escape. He does not achieve escape velocity. And a sinister figure, like, shuts down all the power, which seems to be part of what is preventing him from being able to do that.
An angry old in science fiction is just so naturally coded toward an Emperor Palpatine type figure that when this person's voice is first heard,
no one shall escape.
You just naturally imagine that's who's saying this dialogue. At least I was.
Yeah, it's the diviner, as voiced by John Noble, who played the Lord Protector of is that Gondor in Lord of the Rings?
Oh, well, you would know. You're more of a ringer than I am.
He's the guy that eats the gross tomatoes and makes one of the hobbits sing for him.
Rule of Gondor is mine and no others.
We get a scene where a Kazon guy is dropping off a kitten to the evil robot and a goth lady who seems to be like one of the higher ups at the prison.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it evil to be trafficking in slaves, but everyone knows that pets make terrible gifts. You don't want to do that. And so that's what this Kazon's there to do.
That's not a good thing to surprise someone with.
Yeah. Kazon's like, well, I know I've given you a ton of kids up until now for your labor camp. And I really want to apologize for not being able to find any lately. Yeah. It appears I've just found all the kids.
Kids are hard to come by these days.
Hopefully this kitten softens the blow. And Gwyn is pissed about this. She says something that Jeffrey Epstein has never said, which is they don't want them so young anymore. That's her main gripe.
So the Kazon heads back to his Lolita Express. And
is this show for kids? Who is this show for?
It's ben. Not for anyone. It's bad. This cat is, I think, the same species as Dr. Katz on Lower Decks, right?
Her name is Dr. Tana.
Hard to imagine Dr. Katz as a kitten, given how grizzled Dr. Katz is.
So they purr back and forth a little bit. The goth lady is like capable of speaking many tongues. And so is Dreadnought, the sinister robot.
Mm-hmm.
They work for the diviner, and it is revealed in this scene that this lady is the diviner's daughter, but she works for him, but does not know what his ultimate design is. He's been pursuing some sinister scheme, and she's helping him, but she doesn't actually know what it is.
You ever have any friends growing up who lived in such a strict household that they had to use proper names for their parents? Like, that's the sort of household that Gwyn lives in.
My paternal grandfather was named Rick, and my dad grew up in such a household. And eventually, like, at some point when he was a kid, extracted an agreement from his father that he could call him Pop instead of Rick.
That was a strange negotiation, I bet.
He could never remember it like in the moment because it was just the instinct to call him Rick. So yeah. For like a lot of his childhood, he would run into the room and say, "Rick, I mean Pop, I got an A on my test."
Did he ever call him Prick on accident, like confusing it in the mouth?
I don't know.
That's a mistake you only make once.
When I was a kid, I would sometimes call my grandfather Rick, I mean Pop, just as a term of endearment. It seems like the diviner lives in some kind of giant lava lamp, Adam.
No one who's truly evil likes to live somewhere nice. It's not like our evil people. Our evil people of today love living in paradise.
Yeah.
On their private islands or whatever.
They just go to Little St. James and chill out.
In science fiction, they all want to live in lava lamps. Why is that?
I don't know. It makes it easier to spot them in fiction.
Yeah, you can see the lava from space.
Yeah, you wouldn't immediately assume somebody on a little island like Little St. James would be as depraved as they actually are.
Yeah, the main conflict of this scene is that Gwyn is a light torturer.
Yeah,
unlike her father, who wants the hammer brought down through Dreadnought, and Gwyn is like, look, I think if given a little time, I can figure out where this fugitive might be through Dal using my softer touch. So why don't you give me a chance to do that first?
And so it is agreed, and she's off to go administer this interrogation. And the other crucial, I think, bit of information that we come to learn in here in the scene is that she and her dad are the last of the Von Cat.
What the hell kind of way to act is that?
That's their species, I guess, and they're the last two. So maybe he has a legitimate axe to grind, this diviner guy. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it seems like he's taking it out on a lot of like slave labor, and that's never cool, you know.
You think that the diviner is into making Dal suffer because Dal's family may have something to do with them being the last two of their kind?
Hey, man, that'd be a pretty dark twist to have in a children's show. Yeah, I'm mad at you because you guys did genocide to my guys.
We cut to the interior of Dal R.L.'s cell. L in a cell.
Hey.
Ben.
Whoa.
Do not let this wordplay distract you from the fact that in 1998, The Undertaker threw mankind off Hell in a Cell and plummeted 16 feet through an announcer's table, Ben.
I wouldn't dream of forgetting that ignoble day.
There's a voice talking to Dal in here, and this voice seems to be encouraging a prison break. Another one. And Dal's like, I already did that today, even.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of tired of prison breaking.
Way ahead of you. Kind of sick of it.
Yeah.
But pretty soon some exocomps come grab him, and he is brought to a room where there are some leeches in a bowl for him to eat, and Gwen, the goth lady, there to talk to him. Is the only other person that he is able to communicate with, because in this prison, universal translators are forbidden to prevent the prisoners from getting into cat boots with each other.
This room is great. This room is meant to be shot in CinemaScope.
Yeah.
It's like super horizontal. Mm-hmm. And the one shutter opens and it's like 200 feet wide.
Like 2 feet tall.
All of the lighting is very cinematic too.
Yeah.
In this room, I mean, and all rooms really on this show.
Yeah.
It's a beautifully ugly place.
It really is. And he kind of reveals to her that he doesn't know anything about Fugitive Zero. He says, I don't know the guy. And she explains that Prisoner Zero does not have a gender, because Prisoner Zero is a Medusan, which is a TOS alien that makes you crazy if you look at it.
So Dal takes a moment to enter an apology into his notes app. And he's like, look, I know I said a thing that I didn't mean. I just didn't know. And I'm really sorry for that.
And she's like,
you know nothing.
I know that tone doesn't come across great in text, but it seems like you're being like really defensive about an honest mistake that like all anyone is asking for you to do is just correct and move on.
A little sincerity versus PR spone corporate speak might be welcome in a case like this. Yeah. Just be a real person.
Yeah. All Fugitive Zero wants is a little validation.
Gwen and Dal have the kind of rapport that seems more casual than just prisoner and daughter of the prison warden.
Yeah. It seems like they've been in conversations like this a few times.
Kind of feels like Dal might have stuck it through the bars, you know, from time to time.
Yeah. He's of an unknown species, so that might mean sticking his knee or elbow through the bars, as far as we know.
Yeah. So Gwen is trying to impress upon Dal how important it is that Dal tells her where Fugitive Zero is, because if he does not, this is as good as it's going to get.
That's your ass.
W/R/T interrogation.
So he agrees to figure this out and is condemned to deep core mining for his trouble. So he is on the elevator down, like watching the employee orientation video about how dangerous deep core mining is. And he learns through this video that he is going to have his ankle bracelet linked to the big, scary rock guy's ankle bracelet.
I got to say, as someone who has made instructional videos for dangerous environments, this particular orientation video is lacking some detail.
There's a lot of X's down there.
I think you want to really show how painful it's going to be when the hot pot of boiling oil falls on you when you slip on the slippery floor in the Canadian restaurant kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
So Del and this rock creature are off kind of down a tunnel by themselves, and Del is trying to convince this creature, hey, like, look, if we work together, maybe we can escape. And the rock creature takes great umbrage with all this dilly-dallying. Dal falls backwards while holding a laser beam up and cuts a huge slice out of the ceiling. And rocks start coming down, and rock creature saves Dal from becoming an X.
I don't think it's too early to say this right now. Dal is a terrible miner and kind of a liability down there as a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to put him somewhere else. Yeah. Besides the mining operation, maybe some administrative work, like some filing has to be done, certainly.
I think he should have been tried as a miner. I don't think he should have been put here in the first place.
Hmm. Yeah, real hardline stance there, Ben.
yeah, you're right. He's bad at it, but this lucky shot has revealed that they are in kind of the mother lode of this mine. They are surrounded by these crystals. But not just that, Adam. Something way better in this chasm that has been opened up.
It's like if the Genesis cave could make crystals and starships. That's the big reveal here.
Can I cook or can't I?
This is a starship that is very much on the lines of Starship Voyager, but a more updated design.
I was trying to get the scale of this thing too. Like how big do you need a ship to be for it to be a ship versus a shuttle? Because like looking at the ramp and the scale between ramp and person,
yeah,
it seems like bigger than a shuttle but smaller than a ship.
It's like midpoint between runabout and ship, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a little guy.
We do see the back area right away.
Yeah, which is nice, you know.
No mystery there.
So they start walking around, exploring the inside of it. This entire time, we're getting close-ups on Fugitive Zero Eye, observing mm-hmm. this whole sequence of events. And they come up on the bridge, and this is where they find the communicator badge that enables them to start having conversations for the first time. And it is revealed that the big scary rock man is actually a sweet, scary rock child.
What did you press?
This was a fun reveal up until the moment I started really keying in on Rock Talk's mouth. And Rock Talk has Nagila mouth. And it creeps the shit out of me. It looks like a fucking Conan O'Brien sketch.
I love Denver. You know why?
No, why?
Because it's always mountain time.
Do you think that this is like a situation like the Sonic the Hedgehog movie where they should have taken it back to the drawing board and taken the human teeth out of the mouth of Rock Talk?
Yes, I absolutely feel that way. I am sincere. Like, I can't look at Rock Talk anymore.
I kind of like it. I got to say.
I think it's gross as hell, and I think it's bad for kids.
I don't know. You have like the whatever the equivalent of misophonia is for seeing teeth in places that seem incongruous.
Who is this mouth for, Ben?
So they're very excited about this ship, and this is when Fugitive Zero reveals themselves to Dal and Rock Talk, and the robot suit that Fugitive Zero is in is designed to prevent madness from befalling anyone that looks at Fugitive Zero. And that is because of the kind of thing Fugitive Zero is. And there's a flashback to when Fugitive Zero was under the control of the colony, where it was used to drive people insane.
I was forced to do terrible things.
He put that thing on me.
As all Medusans are, you can't look at Medusans without wearing sunglasses or something.
Yeah.
And we see a flashback of this. I've had days like this, Ben. You have a breakout so bad.
Yeah.
You can't show your face to people.
It was really sad to see what finally ended up happening to Morn.
Yeah.
He went mad in prison.
Yeah. I mean, is that canon? I guess it is.
It's canon. That was Morn.
Yeah. It sucks.
He is the Lurian.
So you can look at Fugitive Zero now because they are in kind of a, old-timey diving suit that they made to contain themselves. And
yeah, it's that a sometimes that... has legs, but sometimes is just floaty.
Yeah, I had a hard time figuring out just what the suit's deal was. Like at one point, they lose an arm.
Yeah.
But does that mean that the arms are like interchangeable tools, or did they just forget the arm somewhere? Like, I couldn't quite figure that out.
Well, you know, when you're like doing, you know, when you're building something and you're using a lot of different tools, you put something down and then you like pick up another thing and you're using that for a while. And then you're like, wow, where'd that hammer go? I swear I just had it. You know, it's like one of those things. Disorganized workspace.
You know, you find an arm just laying somewhere. You might want to see what that can do. Maybe go
stick
exploring.
It through the bars.
Maybe, yeah. Stick the arm through the bars.
Who is this
stick
for?
Stick the arm through the bars and find out.
They go find Jankum Pog, the Tellarite that Dal stole the car from earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need an engineer to get this ship up and running. They figure this ship is their way out. And Jankum Pog, initially very impressed that they have a universal translator, but not interested in helping them because Jankum Pog loves this shit.
Ben, I don't watch a lot of children's programming. I know that's more your forte. I wonder to what extent, like, character names on these shows are run through a kind of linguistics study to see how easily pronounceable they might be for kids. Like, it seems like Rock Talk and Pog, you could easily hear those names being said in a child's voice, and like Gwyn and stuff. Like, I wonder if they focus group this shit.
I wonder. Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you make a children's cartoon show, you are thinking about the show itself, and you are thinking about all of the like toy
the
merchandising
merch.
And stuff,
yeah.
And
yeah.
how these are gonna look hanging on a peg in Target or whatever.
Here comes my Kazon slave trader ship. Pew pew pew.
Drive them mad, Fugitive Zero.
Ben, your parents famously did not permit you to play with guns, like toy guns as toys. Do you think they would have allowed the slave trader ship as a toy in your household?
Yeah, I think that would have been cool with that.
Yeah.
But Jankum Pog, very susceptible to reverse psychology. My prediction that I will just throw down right now is that this becomes a running gag, that they mm-hmm. always need to convince Jankum Pog by making it seem like Jankum Pog won't like the thing that they need him to do.
Jankum Pog, perfectly voice cast with Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah.
Great work there. Great work, Zooks.
Great work, Zooks. He has one of those voices where the character design never needs to hue mm-hmm. to the actor that is performing
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Like, he can really like throw his voice into just about any kind of character in a fun way.
This is a scene where Zero's telepathic ability is on display, and Zero makes things awkward between everyone because they know that unless they can get the ship out of there today, like, what's it going to take to put you in this starship and have the starship leave for space today?
Yeah.
Unless they're able to do that, Dal is going to be subject to a form of torture that is going to be less pleasurable than eating berries with Gwyn.
So it's go time. And with that realized, we cut to Gwyn's office or something where she is hanging out with that cat.
Uh-huh.
Talking about her theory of language.
I know, it sounds like nonsense.
Looks like the cat is bored as hell here. Yeah. Nothing to play with for the cat.
Yeah, and the cat's really scared of Dreadnought, who keeps coming in.
It'd be great if like these displays, these holo displays, were being treated like a laser, and the little cat was just freaking out, trying to catch all of these
yeah.
displays.
And Gwyn was like, no, that one, that's my tax documents folder. Leave that one alone. Don't click on that. It's a private financial information.
Dreadnought does that power move where he's like, hey, Gwyn, whatever happened to your plan with Del? And Gwyn's like, yeah, I had Del, you know, back in the deep mines, you know, looking for Fugitive Zero. And Dreadnought's like, gotcha. Dal's gone. You fucked up. You fucked up and I found out.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore. And you really can't tell your story, tell the story of what you do, and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Protostar, Rock Talk has roped another crew member into the gang. It's that booger dog from an earlier scene. That Rock Talk has named Murph because even though they now have universal translators, nobody knows what Murph is saying, so...
He's probably too smart for translators.
Who is Murph for?
This episode makes me ask a bunch of questions about universal translators. Like, the first time you hear Rock Talk speak without universal translator, it's terrifying snarls and growls in a very low cadence. Yeah. And so the universal translator is not just... like letting us understand Rock Talk, but it's also interpreting how Rock Talk might sound given Rock Talk's age and like socioeconomic status and stuff. Like,
yeah. Kind of a leap for the universal translator. And it's probably gotten the Federation into a lot of trouble over the years with the assumptions that it makes.
It's making some very wild assumptions.
In a minute, we see the universal translator taking it to the notes app saying, look, I just want to apologize for the literal centuries. I've made some pretty difficult assumptions about races and ages.
And you know, imbued presuppositions about those races into the way I present their speech patterns to others, which is, you know, a problem with algorithmic systems. You know, they reinforce stereotypes that were built into them by their human designers. So in a lot of ways, it's not my fault because, you know, I am only as good as the humans that designed me.
Can you imagine how much blood is on the universal translator's hands for, like, the Klingon Federation War, for example? Whoops.
Hey, did you know that it was translating the word humor as honor this whole time? They're Yikes. Just funny guys that love joking around.
They always say the punchline twice, those Klingons.
Yeah. I mean, what more would you expect from a species that have two dongs?
Right. Murph is most definitely here to remind us that this is a children's show, right?
Yeah. So as they are onboarding Murph in the HR department of Starship Protostar.
Murph's going to have a hard time doing the drug test, I think.
Yeah.
Murph looks like drugs.
Yeah. Dreadnought and Gwyn and a bunch of exocomps come down the tunnel to where they are. So Dal has to go run interference, which he does by gathering up a bunch of these crystals and running out to meet them before they come far enough down the tunnel to see the giant starship.
Dal, if you're hiding something.
Yeah, Dal, you gotta have this meeting off-site,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so this does not go great. Dreadnought takes Dal into custody and is good enough not to peek further down the hallway to see the giant starship.
Dal, if you're hiding something.
What Dreadnought has their mind all about is taking Dal to the Wheel of Pain from Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, I thought if Dal lasted long enough, he could really get bulked up. Maybe that's why he's so much smaller than some of the other characters in his mind.
I was so hoping we got a passage of time here. Where Dal just gets super ripped and exploded. His rat tail gets muscly too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that'd be great.
It looks like a bunch of sausage links together.
A disaster happens before he can bulk up, though. There's some kind of industrial disaster that again causes his anklet to break off. His anklet just cannot stay on his ankle.
Hey, you know what they should do is make anklets out of the stuff they're mining in this place. That stuff seems super strong. It's like building the plane out of the black box material.
That would be wise.
Yeah.
But it turns out this was all just a scheme. It was Gwyn and Dreadnought tricking him into thinking he's free so that he will run back to wherever Fugitive Zero is, leading them right to their quarry. No pun intended.
When they follow Dal to where the ship is, they're like, God, we were just here. And then they round the corner and they're like, God damn it. We were right here.
We were right here. Damn it. Oh. Idiots. The diviner is going to be so mad.
We had like 50 exocomps in this exact area and no one thought to just send them out to scout?
They're obviously super expendable. Just send one. One! That's all it would have taken, and we would have known.
One!
Ah!
I think Jimmy Simpson does a much better job as Dreadnought than either of us would do.
Dal makes it back. Everybody is excited to see him, and he's like, wait, you guys were just going to leave without me, weren't you? And they're like, no. Yes, we were.
I'm expendable.
So they've got one last thing that's got to get fixed, which is the shields, because the ship has no shields, and there's a lot of debris around this asteroid or whatever. So that's going to be Dal's job. He's got to go put a battery in the shield battery compartment, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy. Once you see this setup, like, this is the only one that hasn't been inserted.
You get a boombox, and it's got 9 out of 10 batteries in it. It's not going to turn on.
No, really won't.
It's too bad they don't have redundancy.
I know about redundancy, Mr. Hunter.
Yeah, it's too bad. Gwyn shows up to confront the group about lying here.
Hey, this is a evil slave labor prison colony. Why aren't we all acting in good faith? What gives?
And Dal in this moment reveals himself to be smart enough to recognize that he's been duped by her.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have too much time to argue the issue because here comes the Watchers crawling their way toward them along with Dreadnought. Dreadnought knew the ship was on the planet. He just didn't know exactly where it was.
Yeah. This is what the Diviner has been looking for this entire time.
Yeah.
And now they've got it. They've got Fugitive Zero. They got everything.
Everyone's got their hands up.
Game over, man. It's game over.
So a couple of exocomps and Gwyn head onto the ship to clear it for other potential escapees. And this is when Dal is able to telepathically transmit to the Fugitive Zero that he would like to punch his way out. Fugitive Zero stupidly explains that this is the plan to Jankum Pog, who also agrees that this is a great idea. And so a big Star Trek fight breaks out.
We talk a lot about especially in Lower Decks, like, this is the sort of thing only a high-spec cartoon would do. Like, you could never do this in live action.
Right.
But when you see the faces that Dal makes while communicating telepathically,
yeah,
that is also an example of something you could only do in a cartoon. You could never do that with an actor in real life. It would look too derpy.
Too derpy. But, yeah, cartoons let you get so much bigger with expressions and with like sight gags and stuff, and
yeah.
And so this fight is very fun, and they all like run back to the ship after destroying a few exocomps. They tie Gwen up after fighting her for a bit. She's got like her like arm jewelry is like a nano sword, but no match for Rock Talk. Rock Talk is not going to get hurt by a sword.
This is going to be the new henna tattoo at the Star Trek convention.
Oh yeah.
Situation going forward.
Yeah. Cool
this
weapon.
Is big fun. Yeah. Yeah. The ship during this fight starts skidding toward a canyon. I couldn't quite figure out how it had become unmoored, but it starts slip sliding down towards the gap. And
I think it's just getting hit with so much phaser fire.
Yeah.
And the Diviner is on the radio with Dreadnought saying like, if that ship gets fucked up, that's your ass, Dreadnought. Like, do not mess my ship up.
Dreadnought in this scene makes me feel empathy for him because, like, what more does he have to do to satisfy his boss? Like,
yeah.
Jesus, he's doing the best he can.
Given the situation, this is the best he can do. But
yeah. Hey, maybe make your instructions a little clearer.
Yeah. You know what happens in sci-fi when a spaceship is falling down a crevasse and looks like it will surely be crushed? Adam?
I do know. We've got to turn up the score and slowly allow the ship to rise into a kind of moment of playing the theme song,
mm-hmm.
amount of triumph.
Yeah.
This is a J.J. Abrams trick. This is what he did in the first Star Trek movie.
It really is. And so they start to pilot their way out of there. The ship is moving in slow motion at first because we've got to get some like beauty shots of the ship, have it go under a waterfall.
That was really pretty.
Have all the miners cheer them on.
Yeah.
Dal is up on top of the ship with that battery. Still hasn't gotten it installed.
I thought it was funny how that one miner threw Dal some beads. That's just for the adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is this for? Dal is in a real pickle because he's the only one outside the ship, and as the ship gets closer to escaping, he becomes a little more emphatic with wanting to get back in there.
The danger gets ratcheted up even further when Dreadnought plops down on top of the ship near Dal and throws off his cloak to reveal that he is a real Grievous type.
Hello there.
He's got a body that could be sued by a Wachowski for stolen IP.
They are scrapping while the ship is accelerating. He uses his telepathic connection with Fugitive Zero to get Fugitive Zero to turn the wheel real hard and spin the ship, which gets Dreadnought away from him just long enough to throw that battery in the battery hole.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great moment where the shields go up and are standing in between Dal and Dreadnought.
Tough break. Now bug off!
Who slips away and bonks off the nacelle.
I mean, it's not like that scene in Mission Impossible where the bad guy is on top of the train and like gets decapitated by the light. It's not quite like that. This seems like a survivable injury for Dreadnought, right?
I totally had the scene where Dennis Hopper had that happen to him in Speed. It has never occurred to me that both Mission Impossible and Speed have that moment.
God, you're right.
Man.
And they both do it so great.
Like, more moments like that, please.
Yeah. Yeah, more decapitations.
Yeah.
That's what we need in movies.
It's not going to hurt any.
That's only one of the problems, though, right,
yeah,
Ben? Like,
you think they're free.
Yeah.
But Dreadnought has giant guns also, which, you know, he could have used on Dal a minute ago, but instead uses to shoot some girders to create an obstruction in the tunnel that they're flying through.
The Diviner is going to be so pissed about just the mining operation writ large. Like,
a lot of equipment is getting badly damaged here.
Yeah, and the Diviner, I mean, clearly the diviner has a business to run, and and the diviner has made a choice about whether or not the ship is more important.
You would hope. I mean, yeah, like, is this all in service of finding the ship, or does, like, the diviner hope to, like, have the ship and also the mine going forward?
Yeah, it appears they're willing to trade one for the other. But, I mean, in order to get out of this tunnel, they need to find the phasers, because the hole, the opening, the aperture at the end of this thing has been stuffed up with all of this debris.
Fortunately, Tactical Officer Murph's butt lands on the right buttons. And
Murph is going to be a great security officer, you could tell.
Really going to give Worf a run for his money.
If you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand.
Yeah, and they bust on through this thing, and they are in space.
They are Audi 5000.
They fire four quantum torpedoes behind them, and it just totally destroys the mine.
Every prisoner dead. There was one moment where they cut back to the cat. The little kittens, like, smiling and thrilled that to see the ship leaving. And I was like, oh, this kitty is about to get beamed up for sure.
How could we not literally save the cat, right?
The cat does not get saved.
You know what? Maybe that's a message for the little kids out there. Like, you can't save everyone.
Yeah.
This is real life, kid. You got to make some tough decisions. You're not old enough to take care of a cat.
I was kind of
surprised.
None
of these kids are.
Maybe that'll be a future mission for the Star Trek : Prodigy crew, but for now the cat has been ditched.
Gwyn's a bad cat owner, a bad pet owner.
Yeah.
She just got this cat.
And now she's making her dad take care of it.
Yeah, you know the dad's not gonna take the best care of a cat that's been just, like, dropped in his lap.
Yeah.
This guy's already got a really bad attitude. What do you think he's gonna do with this pet obligation?
She doesn't seem too broken up about it, though. She gets to take her first look at the stars. And
it's probably nice not to have a starship smell like cat box, though.
Oh,
it's something
yeah.
that the people on the Discovery don't know anything about lately.
Right.
Got that fucking cat box smell.
Well, who grudged in here, they say.
Yeah. It fucking sucks. It's the 32nd century, and they still haven't solved for stepping on granules.
You know all those, like, nanorobot controls they have on the ship everywhere in Discovery now? Like, it's that, but for kitty litter.
You can't tell what's nano and what's litter.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. Where are they going to go, Ben? They finally escaped. They could go anywhere.
But they need some help. They need to know what to do. And with the utterance of the word help.
Did someone ask for help?
Janeway, the emergency command training hologram, appears.
Please describe the kids on the bridge emergency, she says.
please describe where I can get my closest cup of hollow coffee.
She appears with just a screaming headache and a bad attitude.
Yeah. We finally get a close look at the diviner also. Mm-hmm. He's got a bunch of tubes plugged into his back.
Yeah, he doesn't look that great. He looks like he's gotten into cupping a little heavily.
He doesn't look as old as I was expecting, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know how it is. Evil ages a person.
It does, yeah.
So this guy's probably like a teenager in show years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You meet Grima Wormtongue once, and it just takes years off of you.
Yeah. Yeah, Dreadnought's got to lay the news on this guy, and he does not take it well.
You want a boss that can accept that to err is human, but I guess Dreadnought isn't human, so.
Yeah. And then the final shot is the camera pans over to Gwyn's cat, hanging on a tree branch. And, like, the cursive at the end of Star Trek VI, hang in there, is written underneath. See, the diviner has a sense of humor about the workplace.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I mean, the question remains, who is this for? I'm not sure it's for me, even though there is a lot to like about it. Like, the cinematic style of animation, the cinematic style of the orchestral soundtrack. I mean, as great as it looks, what didn't work for me was the things that it had to do to be a kid's show. The dialogue explaining the visual every time we see a visual, someone asks a question that is then answered. And, you know, those are things that in a pilot episode like this, I think you and I, you know, could overlook and enjoy the show for its unique properties. But I think if we were to do the series, I think that would become kind of a drag. But, I mean, we're not going to be watching the whole series, so what is there to worry about? I enjoyed it quite a bit. I admit to getting the chills when Janeway popped up on screen. I mean, that's someone without our hit podcast, The Greatest Generation, I would have less of appreciation for. But now I'm a big fan of seeing her and what she's going to do in the weeks ahead. I liked it generally. What about you, Ben?
I liked it for the reasons you list. And yeah, like I don't, I think that without this podcast, this is not a show that I would sign up to watch every week. But I think it's very interesting to see a show that is maybe for the first time in a long time, an explicit overture toward the idea of bringing new fans into the franchise and specifically young fans into the franchise.
Right.
And I think it's interesting, like, how they went about creating this first episode. I'm very curious to see how it develops and whether it, you know, like, thinking back to getting into Star Trek, I was probably, like, 9 or 10 when I first committed myself to watching it every day after school.
Yeah, it's weird to think about, right? Like, one of our first Star Trek episodes was Justice, and then today's kid's first Star Trek episode is going to be this. Yeah. Which one is more effective at grabbing and retaining the viewer?
Oh, yes.
Nice planet.
It's a real knuck-free onboarding for a new Star Trek viewer, that's for sure.
Some exciting voice talent coming up also. I see Jason Alexander, Tuffy Diggs, Jamila Jamil, Robert Beltran, all on the list of people we're going to hear doing voices on this show. So there's a lot to be excited about here. And I think I had fun watching this for the episode today.
Murph sits on the tax buttons document. And here's Chakotay here with Hollow Janeway to demonstrate the birds and the bees.
It's J/C online fanfic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adam, do you want to get into the priority one inbox and see what kind of fanfic we have in there?
Oh, yeah. They're always titillating are our priority one messages.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first priority one message is from Baby the Cat. It's to Eric Vogel. The message goes like this. Happy birthday, Damdy. Mommy said it's your 40th birthday.
Whoa.
And since I can't talk, I wanted these guys to tell you that you're the best Damdy in the whole world. I love watching fire shows with you and taking your money to invest in my shrimp wagon business. I love you so much. Also, Mommy, Bucky, and Toopy love you too.
A lot to process in there, but happy birthday, Eric, I think is the main takeaway. And,
right.
Yeah, we only missed you by a week, so that's good.
That's on time to me.
Yeah.
As someone who routinely shows up late for recording and lobby call, like me, a week late. I've showed up to lobby call a week late before.
Yeah, it's really like that. I don't think the people of Denver will ever forgive us.
I don't think many people at the Denver show remember that show. So I think we're fine.
Adam, our next priority one message is from Liz, the original Elsa, a.k.a. Captain Liz Soto. Wow. And it's to Madame Murr, a.k.a. the Dith. It goes like this. Remember when you were by the pool in Vegas watching TGG's Twitch on my phone and the Naked Now on yours? Remember being a bit embarrassed when asked what we were doing by that hip couple? Remember our failed quest for mythical hoofs? Pepperidge Farm remembers. Thanks for being the Data to my Geordi, the Trip to my Archer, and the Kim to my Paris. So ends the message.
Wow. Liz and the Dith sound like our kind of people.
Yeah, they must have. So they were watching our Shimoda Day live stream of The Naked Now, where we where we watched along with the episode from poolside in Vegas. Now that's a Vegas poolside hang I can get behind.
It sounds like neither of them watched by dunking their phones into the pool water, which is something that you would have done probably.
they're advertised as waterproof.
But not chlorine proof, as we learned.
Yeah.
As you taught us all, Ben.
The type of water matters.
Well, Ben, the type of Priority One message matters. A friend of DeSoto can either choose the commercial style message or the personal message, as were the ones that we read here on today's show. And both kinds go a long way in supporting The Greatest Discovery.
Yeah.
A show that needs your support.
Thanks very much.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself a MRF?
Yeah, I do think it's MRF, actually. The butt on the controls saving the day move, I feel like, is the, you know, what you're going to need in an Edward Larkin type situation.
Yeah.
And that joke always slaps.
I'm going to agree with you too, Ben. I was as surprised as anyone that that a children's show would have butt stuff in it, but there's MRF. There's MRF.
Jeez,
there
MRF.
There's MRF there to drop it right on the console. Dumping it out on the console is what MRF is doing until we have to fire our phasers.
Dump truck MRF, back at it again.
MRF got my phasers like...
If you could see it from MRF's front.
Yeah, so thanks for listening to the show today, a show which will be known primarily for sexualizing MRF.
Yeah, we'll be back next week, depending on whether... this is a big old Prodigy episode or a little one. We may bring some comics to the table next week.
Yeah, some new, remains to be seen.
Star Trek Mirror Universe comics out that we've been meaning to read. So, I mean, we'll definitely talk about Prodigy next week, but we may, you know, just cover it lightly while we cover some other stuff as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to just squat down on the whole episode like MRF would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cover that whole thing up.
You're not allowed to wear sweatpants to MRFs.
Well, we're gonna go rewind the episode and watch MRF wobble with it. So enjoy these fine credits as read by Adam Pranica.
How about that? A premiere episode for yet another new Star Trek show, recorded and edited in about 6 hours. A new record. I want to thank Ben Harrison first and foremost for putting up with me in general, but also jumping through some scheduling hoops to accommodate my weird schedule this week. Can't wait to have a producer hired, and we're getting very close to doing just that. Support for the show makes it possible. And I'm inviting you to join the many who already have at MaximumFun.org/join. Adam Ragusian makes our music. Bill Tilley is our chief engineer of social media, at Greatest Trek on Twitter and Instagram. Our official social media accounts are supplemented by some great fan-made communities like the Discord at DrunkShimoda.com, the Reddit page at r/GreatestGen, and the many Facebook groups and pages you can find loosely and tightly related to the Greatest Gen family of shows. If I have the schedule right this time, we'll be back at you next week with another episode of The Greatest Discovery. Thanks for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.